Session number 23192, Reel 5.
If you'd like to just say that again.
5734207, Griffiths R.
Right, all right, thank you. Roy Griffiths, tape 3, reel 5. We would come up to VE Day and we were discussing your reactions and thinking about the memories that you had of the war. Are there any other recollections that have come back to you?
Yes. Actually, towards the end of the war, we were moving in to attack a German airfield, and we were all spaced out, and we were going down a track towards this airfield, and I noticed as we got nearer a railway line going across the track. As we reached it, a mine went up underneath our left track. It slewed us across, and another one went up in the middle of the railway line under our right track, which slewed us back again when a third one went up under our left track again. Well, of course, as you can imagine, the noise and shock of it. For a second, we sat there stunned. I remember looking at the gunner, whose eyes were out like hat bags, staring at me. And I looked down and I could see into the driver's compartment where there was a lot of dust, and the driver was slumped over his sticks. So when I recovered, the tank commander said, come up and inform them at HQ. So I went on over the air and told them we'd been knocked out. And we waited there. But of course, unfortunately, the Germans must have been listening. And they opened up with HE, probing, I suppose, to try and get us. It was all around the area. That went on for a little while, but gradually died out because perhaps they were engaged elsewhere. Well, after a while, or it seemed ages, we heard a tank coming up behind us, and it proved to be the recovery vehicle. This was a tank without a turret and all the necessary equipment to recover knocked out tanks, with a crew aboard. As they were coming down the track, they went up on another mine that we'd missed. So they were out of the game for a bit. So it was ages we sat there. We tried to climb down over the turret of the Sherman to see how the driver was, and he seemed to be in a bad way. Because I think what happened, from what I could see, two mines having gone up under his side had stowed in the bottom of the tank, and he'd brought it right up through his back. his sticks, that is the two sticks which guide a tank, they were twisted like Harry Lauder's cane. Well, eventually an ambulance truck came up and two very brave chaps with a stretcher came and walked down. We loaded the driver on, and they took him away. We didn't see him again. The recovery vehicle had by that time fixed their track, which had come off when their mine went up. They trundled down and towed us out of the way. So that operation ended for us because we had to go back to the the squadron that held the fresh tanks and get a new tank. Mines are, they were rotten things, really rotten. I saw a chap step on a mine, stepped on it with his left foot. It took his left foot right off, and the force of the explosion literally stripped the flesh off his leg right up to above his knee. And there was just the bone left. And he just lay there. Somebody gave him a cigarette. He was still alive. He puffed at his fag with his body twitching until the medics came and took him away. He died, I think, of the sheer shock. So as I say, mines, beastly things. Funnily enough, in 1953, when we were doing manoeuvres in the Libyan desert, one of our tanks went over a mine. It had lain there since all the fighting in North Africa. Better that the tank went over it. It was by that time tanks were much sturdier vehicles and they didn't cause any bother. But one wonders how many poor Arabs and people had gone up on these mines lying there dormant.
Did you lose any other of your crew, or did you stay together as a crew mostly?
No, the rest of us stayed together. We got another driver and were back in action, a matter of a week later.
And did you make any close friends amongst the crew?
Oh, yes. Not that I'm in contact with any of them now, unfortunately. But one chap, I was pally with, because once the war ended, we first went to a place called Lintford. And the regiment occupied almost the whole of the village. Rows of houses, and we occupied all the houses.
This was in Germany?
Yes. So I don't know what happened to the inhabitants. And very quickly, things seem to be starting to get back to normal. There was a near mutiny because, taken away from our tanks and our rations, regimental cooks were instituted. And their cooking was appalling. I think, you know, they weren't trained really, and they were just detailed for the job, I think. And the food was horrible, and everybody was really getting fed up. But gradually things settled down. People started getting to mobbed.
So this was immediately after VE Day?
Oh no. Actually, from VE Day, if you remember, I said we ended that at Wismar on the Baltic. We pulled back, and the Russians took over that area. We went to several stations, German barracks, mainly re-equipping and reorganising. And Lintford was about our first real sort of stay for quite a time, actually. Actually, there were horses there, and I was able to do a bit of riding. Several of us went riding in the area. And of course, the old cavalrymen, they were only too pleased to get astride a horse again. My pal and I, he was mad keen on opera. And he heard word that there was opera at, and then where was it? I think it was Dusseldorf. And he persuaded, I'd never seen an opera in my life, but he persuaded me to go with him. And we went to see quite a sizable theatre. It was a North German opera company, I always remember them. Oh Lord, and it was Tosca. I've had a thing about Tosca ever since. Oh gosh. Of course, it was all in German. I didn't understand a word. And it was only much later that I made out what the story was. Anyway, it was a sort of day out, relieved the sort of monotony. And sometime later we went to see Madame Butterfly, which wasn't quite so bad, but I'm not an opera fan, I'm afraid. Anyway, I think my pal was demobbed then. Anyway, other things were happening by then, because at Linford, oh yes, I became a full corporal. And we were starting to try and get a bit of discipline, regimental discipline going in the regiment, become real soldiers, I suppose. And yes, that was about December 1945. And indeed, we got some, our Sherman tanks went, and we were replaced for a time with flame-throwing Churchills, odd vehicles, towing a little thing behind which threw the fluid. Well, the flame came out of a gun in the front. But that was only really playing around. And later on, we received Comets, which were much faster tanks. And we began to organise in troops, but of course, demob was going on. And promotion was fast. So in 1946, I became a Lance Sergeant. Was welcomed into the sergeant's mess. Of course, being a Scottish regiment, whiskey featured quite a lot there. I began to learn how to. You got to hold your whiskey, lad. Cool. I preferred the beer, really. The hangover wasn't so bad. But, you know, it was reorganisation. And then we moved. And this time we moved in 1947. We moved to Lüneburg, which of course is a famous town, very historic town. And not only that, we moved into a German barracks, the like of which I have never seen before. In my up to then, my comparatively short army career, the best barracks I could remember was at Bovington. But this Bovington wasn't a patch on the Schlieffengaserne. It was the old cavalry barracks of Lüneburg, quite near the airfield. And it had got these three-story blocks with the rooms which held about six chaps. None of this great big barrack room idea of the British Army. Central heating. Gaw. All the luxuries in the world. It really was great. And by that time, the families had started coming out of the married soldiers who were regulars, and they were placed in German houses, and because the men lived out, which meant more hard work for us single blokes, because you had to fill in for the married man who was back home with his wife. But life took on a much pleasanter aspect.
What were your relationships like with the local German people? Were they resentful?
Well, at that time, we were not allowed to fraternise. But after a time, it was allowed. And our sergeant's mess, for instance, started to employ German waitresses and cooks and waiters. And indeed, the regiment did. Women and men, cleaners and that for all the blocks that. To save our men, because by that time the regiment had become very depleted in strength, naturally, with the mob. But national service was coming in, and I think I was I was sent home. I was sent to collect the first batch of national servicemen, and took them back by sort of boat, you know, and train back to Lüneburg. By that time, C squadron of the regiment was disbanded because of lack of strength, and A squadron became the training squadron for these national servicemen. B squadron just consisted of one troop, the AFV troop, and this was made up of chaps like myself who were regular soldiers, and our job was to service the tanks, and we were now getting Centurion tanks, which were real tanks, Carl.
What sort of armament did those have?
I think the front, the glassy plate, what they call the glassy plate, which is a sloping one in front of the tank, I think that was 11 inches thick. It was quite a heavy, really heavy, 30-odd tons, with almost 17 pounders at that time on them. And so life for me consisted of simply working on these tanks, ready for the time when A squadron finished with the national servicemen who were doing basic training. And the barrack square resounded to the screams and shouts of drill sergeants and poor little devils running around.
Can you remember any incidents of the National Service boys?
Well, as a matter of fact, a name sticks in my mind. don't know whether I should say this. One of the national servicemen which came to us was a descendant of the man who formed the Royal Scots Greys back in 1678. His name was Tamdiel of the Binns.
Can you remember him well?
I remember his descendant very well. And of course, I suppose a lot of other people will know the name. But life generally became quite colourful. In 1947, we sent a squad to Berlin to ride in a musical ride in the Tattoo held in Berlin. They wore the full dress, because by that time the full dress was coming to the regiment, and the regiment was making every effort to return to being a regular regiment, but of course the numbers of regulars were still depleted but made up by the ever-growing number of national service lads. Eventually B squadron became a training squadron, and I became the troop sergeant of a troop of national servicemen, and found myself on the square screaming my head off, and so life went on. But you asked about relations with the German people. Um, to the amazement of many of us, I suppose, we found they were quite nice, the ordinary civilians. The people who were employed in the barracks were fine. We were allowed out. In fact, sergeants were allowed out until midnight. The men until 10 o'clock. There was a dance hall just down the road. We often used to go there, and that's where we met many German girls. Some were devils. Gosh, I really began to pity them. You know, in conversation, you sort of learnt their history, and many had escaped before the Russian advance, heading westward, often, you know, without parents or anything, and were living in one room in Lüneburg, some with children. And sadly, I'm afraid, it became a thing among many of them that the obvious thing was to get hold of a British soldier, because bars of chocolate and packets of cigarettes on their black market, you know, kept them going and fed them. Others, you know, you met had jobs. Some I think were, from my accounts of chaps have told me, you know, sort of very superior, and probably, you know, would naturally be anti-British. But the area surrounding Lüneburg was very pleasant. And then the Nafis began to arrive. Lüneburg became the headquarters of 21st Army Group. And as I say, Nafis, there's a warrant officers and sergeants club started up in the town where we could go and get quite reasonable meals. Our own meals by this time were improving considerably, I hasten to add.
What would be an average meal in the sergeant's mess?
Varied according to the cook.